Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of How We Roll Podcast. We're an RPG-based podcast, and we focus on Call of Cthulhu, some Dungeons & Dragons, and occasionally one-off campaigns. If you're interested in contacting us and want to know where you can find our podcasts, you can visit howwerollpodcast.com.
Fancy.
Which offers links to Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, SoundCloud, Reddit, and Twitch.
What?
If you enjoy what we do and want to support us, you can donate to us on Patreon. And with that said, let's get on with the show.
Yes, please, please, just get on with the show. Yes.
Okay, let's get going. So, hello, and welcome back to How We Roll Podcast. As you may know, we are on a break from Curse of Strahd while I write up Chapter 3, and we're going to be playing some Call of Cthulhu. This Call of Cthulhu scenario is absolutely fantastic. It's written by a good friend of the show, Scott Dorwood, and it is called Bleak Prospect. But before I tell you any more about that, we are going to introduce the players and we're going to introduce our characters. And before we do, my name is Joe Trier and I'll be the keeper tonight. And I will try my best not to kill you too soon. So, who are you and who are you playing? Let's start with Dave.
Hey, my player's name is Dave, and we're having an internal argument tonight about who feels worse. Is me, you know, some sort of unspecified, probably supernatural disease going on, a little bit of psoriasis and stuff, and is him who's got a migraine tonight. And, well, I guess, you know, since I'm about to die and he's not, you know, I deserve a little bit more sympathy from him, but doesn't sound like I'm going to get it.
And so Dave will be reprising the role of Finn Anders, and I'm so sorry if I kill you tonight, Dave. So next up is Niall. Welcome back to the show, Niall.
Hey guys, I'm Niall, just a regular now with How We Roll, and I am playing a character called Thomas Dolan, who is an Irish immigrant in Boston, Massachusetts. And he worked in the textile industries until the crash in 1929 of the stock market, which really fucked up his wealth. And he got back on track for a while, but then he got sick and he got absolutely destroyed by all of his competitors and creditors. So he's now a hobo, living near his hometown in a shanty town with nothing except his fiddle.
I think we're going to find that's going to be a common theme tonight. So next up is Curin. Curin, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I am going to be playing Carl Rostein, who is a German who was once a senior academic leading the physics department at Miskatonic University. And when the economic crisis struck, I just had so many problems. My wife left me, and everything has just been horrible ever since. So I find myself in this camp in the outskirts of Arkham. But I feel like I have made some friends here. And that's Carl.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Curry. That was amazing. And our last regular player tonight is Lisa. Welcome back to the show, Lisa. Who are you playing tonight?
Hello, I'm Lisa Lee, and I am playing Agatha Priestley. She's a former journalist with the Crawley Examiner, I think. That's right. She had job offers with the Boston Globe, the New York Times, maybe, but everything happened in the crash, and now she's destitute.
Thank you. And it is. I think that's going to be the theme. And last, but by no means least, we have, joining us as a guest player for the first time, we have Lindy. Welcome to the show, Lindy.
Hello! I am super excited to be here. I am always down for a game of Call of Cthulhu. So down. Love it. I love suffering.
Yeah.
Today I will be playing Maureen Frayne. She is a Southern Belle. She is from old money, but unfortunately her husband Charles, well, he didn't take the stock market crash nearly as well as, as what I would have lacked, and he kind of took it in matters into his own hands with a revolver. So now it's just me and our daughter Esther kind of living in this shanty town, and well, I am determined to make it through this and become a socialite once again.
Fingers crossed.
What could go wrong?
Amazing. So I'm going to do a little bit of an introduction and then we'll go straight into it. When does this story actually start? And when you think about it, there are actually very few starts. I mean, things seem to be beginnings. The curtain goes up, the first pawn moves, the first shot is fired. But that's not the start. The play, the game, the war, are just little windows on a ribbon of events that may go back many years. The point is, there is always something before. So when should we begin this story? Should we start back in 1920, when the noted scientist Crawford Tillinghast created his resonating device, which, by stimulating an affected person's pineal gland, allowed them to perceive planes of existence outside our scope of accepted reality? He was driven mad by his creation, or maybe by what his creation allowed him to see. His machine was destroyed, and its blueprints were locked away in the vaults beneath the Miskatonic University. Maybe we should start 3 years later, when those plans were taken from the vaults by Professor Aston Hawkes, a scientist who, like Tillinghast, spent too much time thinking about what he could do and didn't spend long enough thinking about what he should do. And like Tillinghast, he too is now missing. Or should we start tonight's tale on that terrible Tuesday in September 1929? Black Tuesday, it's called today, when the stock markets crashed and the world as we know it ceased to be, and a new world, a decade of misery and despair, was ushered in. Maybe we should focus on those lucky few who didn't just survive the events of the Great Depression, but actually, through blind luck, amazing forethought, or maybe other more nefarious means, actually profited while others lost everything. No. In fact, we shall start tonight's telling on a winter's eve in 1933, as a chill night descends on Hooverville, outside of Crawley near Arkham, Massachusetts. It's a shanty town of sorts, a collection of lean-to houses and lost souls. As a chill wind blows through the trees, their skeletal limbs desperately clutching at their last few leaves, the dispossessed who live here huddle closer around their meagre fires, wrap themselves up best they can in their Hoover blankets, and share their tales of woe to try and forget the pain in their empty bellies. In a rickety dwelling, larger than many others, constructed from corrugated metal and wooden pallets, lies Finn Anders. Fate has not been kind to him. His once strong and stout body is thin and wasted. His face is bruised and battered from the terrible beating that left him unconscious for the past 2 weeks. And like everyone in this Hooverville, he is suffering from a strange wasting disease that is destroying his body from within. Finn, Dave, you open your swollen eyes. Your memory is hazy. You remember coming to Crawley to conduct an investigation. You remember being accosted in an alley by masked men. Then, nothing. Just dreams filled with strange and disquieting sounds, like a radio tuned to static. You look around you. You're lying on an uncomfortable steel bed with a thin, odorous mattress. By the light of a flickering oil lantern, you see, to your left, a small table covered in papers, some boxes, partly ripped open, seemingly filled with medical supplies. And a few feet away, on the opposite side of the shelter, is another bed. Its occupant is groaning as a young girl with lank, greasy blonde hair is trying to feed him water.
Where the hell am I? What the... How... Hey, you, girl...
She turns round and faces you, and you see that she is emaciated, half-starved, and also seems to be suffering from the same wasting skin disease that you are. But she still tries to crack a smile and comes over to you and goes, "Are you all right, sir? You've been asleep for a long time."
I've been better. I've been better. What? How'd I get here?
Maybe I should get the doctor. And she shouts out, "He's awake!" And her voice sort of echoes around the night, but there's no sound from outside other than the wind and the trees and blowing around the crude shelter.
I'm going to sort of just use my elbows to sort of edge myself into, you know, carefully into a sitting position. Like, what kind of legacy have my injuries left? Are my ribs bruised? Am I...
So you're sore. And you feel like a real deep aching side. You like you've not eaten for a long time, but otherwise you think you're solid.
Am I dressed in the clothes, my old street clothes, or have I been changed?
So you've got your shirt on, and that's pretty much it. But you do see nearby your clothes have been folded, if not cleaned, on a little stool nearby.
I'd better get the doctor. He said if you woke up, or if Harold woke up, Mr. Priestley there, then I was to get him. I'd better go.
And she goes to leave the shelter.
Well, that was singularly unenlightening. I'm gonna stagger out of bed and firstly, I'm gonna check my wallet. I know there wasn't much in it, but see if it's still there at all.
Your wallet is not there.
Fucking typical. What about my badge?
Not there. In fact, the only possessions that you can see are the clothes that are folded neatly on a nearby stool.
Ah, for fuck's sake. Sort of, I'll take my pants and plop wearily back on the bed and start getting dressed.
Okay. So, meanwhile, as the cold winter wind blows around the unfortunates of this Hooverville, it focuses in on four of the more, I guess, the residents who've been here for a while. Fernandez and he'd been here a couple of weeks, whereas the four of you have been here for months. And we have, I guess you're around an oil drum, stoked with a few pieces of wood that you've managed to gather. I guess chatting briefly about through the night before you settle down to the cold. And out of the darkness comes young Esther. And she goes, Doctor, has anyone seen Dr. Coombs? He's awoken. That man, the one that came in a couple of weeks ago, he's awake.
Do any of us know where the doctor's been, or have we seen him leave the medical shack lately?
You probably have. I mean, actually, the four of you, is it four of you? Yeah, the four of you are probably the most healthy in the camp. Nearly everyone has been suffering from this terrible wasting disease, which you are all suffering from, but you are probably the most healthy, and you do spend your days either growing food. I think at least one of you has your own sort of garden, maybe hunting for roots. Lisa's character has a garden. Maybe going up to the diner on the road and begging for scraps. You're basically keeping everyone healthy. Dr. Coombs went to bed probably about an hour ago. And he is in a shack nearby.
Am I now there in the room with Harold?
Do you want to head into the medical shack? Yeah, so you come in and you see your poor husband. Now, he has always been ill, and he's probably the worst affected from anyone. And as you kind of push back the door, it creaks loudly, and the form of Finn Anders glances up. Finn, how do you look now?
Obviously, rather the worst for wear. I'm sporting a pretty good goose egg. The right side of my head is a little bit, you know, the hair is a little bit caked with blood, and despite the fact that I've sort of tried to brush it to one side again to get my part back, and wearing what was once obviously a very nice three-piece suit that has been both beaten to hell and back and lovingly repaired many times. Probably as soon as if I see anyone sort of glancing in my directions, I'll look away from the papers and try and bring, you know, my spats back up to something resembling white from the dark gray that they are right now.
Okay, so Lisa's character has opened the door, but she doesn't seem to have any eyes for you. She goes straight to her husband. Lisa, the skin disease that's taken over his body is almost completely it's all you can see. So his skin is cracking, and you see where Esther had given him water has actually like melted away his skin almost, and his lips are just red, a sort of red bloody mess, and his eyes flicker open towards you, but he doesn't have any recognition at all.
Harold, darling, Can you... Oh, God. What happened to him? Do you have any charts? Do you have any records of this? Please, someone tell... And I'm looking at the papers. I'm looking at him, but I rush to him and take his hand in mine and try to get some recognition in his eyes. Harold, are you okay? Can you hear me?
And as you kind of reach out to touch his cheek, his skin begins to like flake and sort of dissolve, and half of his cheek comes away, leaving this kind of like gross, bloody mess. You can see sort of his teeth through them. Yeah. And I need you to roll a sanity check.
Darling, Harold, no.
That is delightfully morbid. Yeah.
Where is my sanity on this thing? I rolled a 17.
17, so that's a pass. So you still lose one sanity, and you let out a shriek of fear and despair. And as you kind of lean forward and you see more of his body begin to dissolve, turning into dust, and he's staring up at you with horrified, painful eyes. But as he kind of opens his mouth, the whole bottom jaw drops away.
Oh!
Jesus Christ. Oh, God!
As she shrieked, Finn rushes over to see what's distressed her.
Okay, I need you to make a sanity check as you see this kind of... The body of Harold Priestley is basically just falling apart. Where she touched him, and maybe where the water first kind of started destroying his broken skin, it started off an avalanche, and now he's just falling apart, and dust is flying into the air.
Jesus!
Making her shriek.
What's the matter with this guy? I rolled a 10.
So one sanity loss. And at that moment, the doctor comes running in with Carl Rothstein, and let's have everyone here, in fact. So Thomas Dolan as well, and Maureen Fren. Esther's coming in right behind as well, and she kind of shrieks when she sees the form of Harold Priestley.
Oh, good heavens! And I cover her eyes.
Realizing that Agatha has touched her dying husband, I'm just wiping my hands on my on my clothes and like, Doc, why the hell did you put me in the same place with this person? He's obviously got a horrible wasting disease. You want me to catch that?
And as they burst in, I need everyone who's not yet rolled a sanity check to roll a sanity check.
I thought you'd never ask.
There we go.
Okay, can you shout out what you got?
I got an 86.
An 80.
Hey.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, can you both lose D6 sanity points?
I rolled a 62.
Same for you then. D6 sanity points, please.
Ooh. Off to a good start, guys.
Come on. One. Six. Hey. Bad madness.
Five.
I got a two. Woo!
Okay, Thomas. Okay, Niall. So with a 5, you are about to have a bout of madness. Can you give me an intelligence roll?
Ooh, here we go.
Fuck it, I'm smart too. 93. Yes, I failed.
Wow.
So you kind of look at the flaking form of poor Harold Priestley, and you look down at your own flaking skin, and you begin to tremble and shake, but you manage to contain yourself, only letting out the merest of a shriek.
You kind of like put my hands in my pockets, pretending that I'm not slowly flaking away in the same kind of way, and I'm looking around the room. I see Finn. I'm like, who are you? What were you? What's going on in here?
I hope you can tell me. I just woke up in here.
So Dr. Coombs kind of comes over to you, Agatha, and goes, "There's nothing we can do for him, Miss Priestley. I'm sorry. He's gone." And he begins to, like, pull the sheet over his head.
You think he's soup?
And can I ask, so Agatha, you're really close, and Finn, you're really close as well. Can you both give me spot hidden checks?
Against 50, I roll a 31!
Nice. And Lisa? In fact, Lisa, you're so close, I'll let you roll with a bonus down.
Ooh! 5 and a 7!
Ooh.
Wow. Okay, so with an extreme success, you see that in sort of buried amongst his decaying flesh are these little leathery pouches. I don't know if you've ever seen the like a dog shark, a dogfish's eggs. They're sort of kind of cubular,
like shark eggs.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Amongst his body, and you sort of see them as the sheet is drawn over. Dull, leathery things, and you also think you might have seen something wriggling within them. I do need you to roll me another sanity check. Finn, you only just saw something dark. With a normal success, you don't see any details.
40.
That's good, and I sure as hell ain't touching that corpse.
I don't see where my sanity is on this little mini.
So your sanity's 40. It's the same as your power.
And I rolled a 40.
40 is a pass. So you kind of, again, you sort of let out a little shriek. Oh no, because your body looked, 39. You lost one sanity. Your sanity's 39.
Oh
so,
no!
Oh, that's right.
So could you lose D6 sanity, please?
Is she working off a PDF just like we are?
Yeah.
She's got something that did slightly better.
No, I just have that little picture that you sent, like the page from a yeah. book you sent me. That's yeah. a 5. So now I'm at a 34.
5. So you've realized how terrible this is, and how he was sort of having these eggs burrowed within his flesh. And I need you to make me an intelligence roll to see if you realize how awful and mind-breakingly disgusting this is.
I like how in the last one of Scott's campaigns we didn't actually roll until like maybe 2 hours into it.
Right?
But in this one we're already starting to go insane.
No, that's HP. We're, a 36 out of over 80.
So I pass. So you've passed, so you know how terrible this
it's
is.
A bad
so you are
thing.
Now temporarily insane. can you give me a 1d10 roll?
God.
This is the quickest I've seen anyone go insane.
Oh, gee, what roll a d10?
1d10, please, yeah. Let's see how this bout of madness takes form.
6.
Okay, you cannot bear to be in the room here. And you look down, you look at your flaking skin and that of Harold just as it disappears under the sheet. And you need to get out of here.
I have to go.
Just come on out. Just let's get you some fresh air, dear. Let's see. Everything will be all right.
Have you seen? What did they do to him? What happened to him?
Deep breaths. Let's get you outside.
I have to go. I need some air.
Maureen's gonna put an arm around the younger woman and like kind of escort her out while also like still covering her daughter's face, kind of drag her out as well. Be like, now Esther, why don't you go on back to bed? It's pretty late and it's already past your bedtime. You run along now. I'm gonna help Miss Agatha here.
Did you see that?
I know it's terrible. It's a terrible thing.
Who's crawling on him?
Oh,
who's crawling?
I'm sure it was. Now here, just have a seat. Here you go. Okay. Sit down right here next to the fire. Okay. All right, now understand losing your husband's difficult. I lost mine about a year ago, and well, everything's just been downhill ever since. But we're already at the bottom of the hill, so the good news is it can't get any worse.
There were eggs. Did you see that? There was something crawling. There was something crawling on
you know,
him.
Well, you know, when a body does start decaying, things do tend to make holes
no,
in there.
No, it wasn't.
But let's not think about that right now. I feel like just concentrate on your breathing right now. Just in and out. Here, I actually have like a tiny little flask. Just take a nip here.
The doctor needs to know that was...
Well, I'm sure a full autopsy will be performed.
And next week in Days of Our Lives.
And inside the little the lean-to shack, Dr. Coombs turns to the three of you and says, "I'm really worried about this disease. Seems to be taking over everyone in the camp. I mean, Mr. Anders, you've only been here a couple of weeks and it's already taken you."
"What?"
"And I'm worried."
Take
look at your skin, look at your hands."
And he starts scratching at his neck and it comes away with flakes and flesh and then rolls up his shirt sleeve and sees it. "Why did you put me in here? You've infected me. You call yourself a doctor?"
It's everyone in the camp, sir. Even myself. It starts off with
the skin flaking away and lethargy, and then the muscles waste and people find they can't even move. There must be a dozen people like Harold. He was the worst, but there must be a dozen at least confined to their shacks. It's only us that can help them.
Jesus Christ, I gotta get to a hospital. I gotta get back to Boston.
If you go to a hospital, you'll infect everyone else. You can't leave here.
I've been to Bentham Hospital, sir. They've and he kind of points to the boxes. The doctor there, Dr. Cavendish, he gives us what he can, but there's nothing he can do. No one's seen anything like this before, and there's something going on. He won't. It's not that he can't intervene. He won't intervene. There's something going on, sir.
Well, entropy is in all things.
Well, thank you for the philosophical note. What was your name again?
Insightful as always, Carl.
Carl. Yeah.
There's always one.
Tomorrow, I'll go back. I'll go back to the hospital, and I'll maybe we take the corpse there, and maybe then they'll pay attention finally. But I don't know what else to do.
Aye, in the meantime, was anything found on me when you picked me up? I'd been attacked by some very odd gentlemen. It's like they could come straight from the opera. They had white masks, but my badge, my gun, my knuckle dusters.
When you say that, Dave, when you say the white masks, everyone in the tent goes pale. Now, for the players, obviously, so Curran and Niall, and if the women outside, if you can hear this, there's been a rumour going round the camp of men in white masks visiting at night. A lot of people have chalked it up to like rumour and spooky tales and things like that, particularly as people kind of, they're known as the men with no faces.
You speak of the men with no faces.
The men with no faces. I think they had a face, it was under a mask. But you heard of them. I got some payback for these guys.
none of you, I mean, again, it's a rumour that's been going round, but it's one that everyone kind of believes, that they come in the night. Some people think they're the ghosts of the people that tried to get to the Hooverville for help and never make it. Other people think it may be, well, something worse. But again, it's a rumour that's going round.
You're welcome to go out and try to find them yourself, Mr. What was the name?
Fernandez. Detective Fernandez.
Yes, of course. Okay, Mr. Anders, you're welcome to go out and get them yourself if you can find them, but...
Well, they've already found me once. That's how I ended up here. With this...
Yeah, so what chance do you think you have if you go out and find them again?
Hey.
One man against how many?
They came from behind. If I'd seen them coming...
Did anyway, the badge not scare them away?
Obviously not. That's what I was saying.
Gentlemen, please, you have some respect for the dead. If you're going to argue, do it outside. If I can get your help tomorrow to take this body to the hospital, then I'd be most appreciative.
Yeah, right, I ain't touching that thing.
But until then, have some respect for the dead.
Sorry, Doctor.
You say that, but we are actually inhaling the dead.
that's actually true.
Good point. And if it heads outside post haste, yeah,
I like go over and crack like a little shanty window next to the bed.
Oh dear.
So as you leave the shelter of the medical tent, which is by far the biggest and the best made of all the shelters in the camp, the winter wind blows again, and you will feel yourself shivering in the cold.
Oof. Sometimes I wonder if I even came to this bloody country.
Why did you, anyway?
I was coming for, you know, business. Everything went wrong.
Business. That's how it all goes.
I came from Frankfurt. It was much better for me there. I really should have stayed.
I was going to say, the Depression hit Germany insanely badly.
Are you saying that in character?
No.
Finn just knows this stuff.
Yes. Now, can I get a straight answer, anybody? Out of anyone? I need my badge.
Go find the men with the white faces.
So they... oh, Jesus.
We've just met the man, and you're like, you just go off on your own, it's fine. Just
well, that's because he's being a bullheaded jerk.
Okay, in character.
And also, like, I see that he's got like a nice three-piece suit on that was probably quite nice before he came down here, so I'm looking at him like he's kind of probably a bit up his own hole, so I'm kind of just not really a fan of that.
Accurate.
So Agatha and Maureen are nearby, and I think Maureen's kind of got Agatha back under control. Like, she seems to be sort of breathing deeply and tear-streaked face, but she's not panicking anymore.
Maureen, we're still sorry about your husband. Is there anything we can do?
Agatha.
Oh, wait.
Well, my husband's dead too, but he's been dead for a year now.
Sorry.
She only recently lost hers.
Agatha, we're so sorry about your husband. Is there anything we can do?
Thank you, and thank you for getting it right. I guess my question now is, are we all going to get like that? Are we all affected? Is this going to happen to all of us?
No. From the moment you were born, you were dying.
Thank you for the philosophy. That's not what I'm asking.
I lean over to this Thomas Dolan's like, I know you don't like me, but you gotta hate this asshole.
God, he just never stops.
So depressed all the time.
Cheer up, Carl. Mr. Rothstein, that's no way to talk. If we could just all keep some optimism here. You know, I feel like something needs to be done about this. I cannot have Esther succumb into this illness the way that Harold did. It's just not right. And I'm sure there's a cure for this somewhere. We just might have to resort to other means of obtaining it, since we ain't got the money.
Have the doctors tested anything? Are there any notes here about tests, about medications, about experiments to solve this?
Dr. Coombs said he doesn't know anything, and he's hoping we're going to, with your permission, take your husband's body to Dr. Cavendish tomorrow, and maybe he can give us some answers then.
Yes, if it will help. Yes.
Mr. Anders, what were you doing here in the first place? Why were you here when you got attacked by the men with no faces?
Well, I was looking into some businessmen, shall we call them, who'd been suspected of some, and he does the air bunnies, air quotations, immoral practices. As far as I'm aware, that's what businessmen do after clock every day, but nah, I got given the gig. Now, I don't want to break the game, mm-hmm. but Finn's first inclination, he has no gun, no badge. His first inclination would be to go, I mean, he'd come back for the investigation, but would be to go back to the station house, replace his badge, report his badge missing, and pick up a replacement service weapon and replacement semi-legal weapons that he carries.
we'll do it in character. So right now you're kind of you're looking around, and there's no street lights. The only things you can see beyond the camp itself are trees, as far as you can go. Like, you know, the starry skies above. You have no idea where you are. You're just surrounded by this group of unfortunates.
Okay. I wanted to do that out of character because I didn't want to, you know, like. Yes, the first thing Finn does is fucks out of camp for 6 hours.
Yeah.
No, it reminds me of when people have the sentences where they say, like, you know, I'm not racist, but it's like, you're just about to say something racist. You're like, I don't want to break the game, but.
Well, I was asking, is that going to break the game? Because if it breaks the game, I won't do it. No.
Role play, and okay. I said, same to all of you, role play your characters as you want to do it. So the only caveat I'd say is right now it's 11 o'clock at night on a cool winter's evening, very cold winter's evening, and that can be a plan for the next day or right now if that's what you want to do, but we'll take it step by step.
What led me to Crawley? What were the clues that I was following?
You're not entirely sure. Your memory is hazy at best.
Right.
In fact, give me an idea roll. Let's see.
Idea roll is my int?
Yes.
It is, yeah.
Int.
Come on, baby.
Daddy needs a new idea. 71. Nope. Dumb as a post.
So, you vaguely remember that you were investigating something called the Midas Circle, which is a group of wealthy businessmen who had been exploiting the market in incredibly... Well, you're not sure. They just seemed to be incredibly successful when everyone around them fell to shit, and so you were investigating them, and you'd come to Crawley to find the source.
Right.
And you remember there were some names that you had found, but they seem to be on the edge of your brain. You can't remember any details.
Okay. Right. Well, I don't want to be walking to the nearest bus stop. Oh, shit. Not that I can pay for bus fare.
Do you think a bus comes here, Mr. Anders?
I was implying that it was a long walk to the bus stop. Genius.
Longer than you know.
Yeah. I don't remember how I got here. Anybody seen a car around?
Perhaps we should just, you know, rest for the night, regroup in the morning, and then we will think about our next course of action.
I'm down for. I'm okay with that.
You are so smart, Mr. Rothstein. I think that is a great plan.
Thank you.
I need to write this up. I need to write this up for the paper. I need to write this up for the doctors. I need to write this.
You do that. You know, just get it all out.
No, you don't understand. I'm not a diarist. I'm a reporter.
Okay, so am I right in saying is everyone settling down for the night? Anyone want to do anything before we kind of move the camera on?
I would definitely start like frantically get some paper and my little beleaguered typewriter and start typing up, you know, December 12th, subject, husband, Harold, deceased, passed away from, and I would just start giving facts to write it down so that I, knowing that I was kind of a little bit off my nut, start writing it down so that I could go back to the notes of it and give it to doctors.
Okay, so before long, Finn, you are the only one left by the smouldering fire as everyone has disappeared off to their shacks.
Is the doctor still in the medical shack?
He is, yeah.
I just sort of, as everyone walks off, and I'm like, look around. Realizing I don't have anywhere to sleep for the night and don't fancy just trudging off into the dark. I'm going to poke my head into the medical shack holding the collar, the lapel of my suit across my face. Like, yeah. Doc, is there somewhere I could sleep for the night? It's, well, not here.
He kind of sort of looks down to the bed you've been sleeping in. And then sort of thinks better of it and goes, "Of course, sir. If you want to grab a blanket, there's room on the floor of my shelter."
Thanks, sir. Thanks a lot. I'll see if I can do you a solid too.
He points you in the direction. Says, "I just need to finish up here. I've seen something strange about this body."
And he's like completely white, and you see that he's like desperately trying to keep in his sanity as he's talking to you.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'll just head off.
Okay.
Player me is not expecting to see him in the morning.
I know. Nope.
Usually goes along those lines.
And Agatha's just going to fall asleep as she's typing, really kind of like wear herself out from the emotion and the trauma. Just and egg sacs, square shaped, oblong, infested in the body.
So you all drift off, your bellies hurting with the lack of food, and your brains and your emotions sort of wrung out. And it's about 2 a.m. when some of you may be awoken. Can you give me a listen roll?
I'm not sure I want to wake up.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Listen.
Oh, nice.
My cold bed. 82.
82 for me as well.
75.
I got 19, 9, 20.
I got 33 versus 20, so I failed.
I rolled a 63 against 50.
Well, we're all fucking deaf.
I rolled 99 against 40.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to say that maybe I'm going a little deaf. I'm just going to be a little bit of ringing in my ear.
Maybe the disease has reached your ears and it's kind of like flaking away.
Yeah, yeah.
You reach up in the night and your earlobe comes off.
Oh!
Oh, that was unexpected.
but you don't feel it. It just flakes away in the night. So
it just
like leprosy.
Odds you return to the earth.
So your dreams are troubled. It's almost like stir in the night, as if you're hearing a strange sound, like a radio tuned to static, and then a kind of almost a strange melody, a tune, and then something terrible, a shriek, and then all you hear is blackness. All you see is blackness. And you are awoken in the morning by an actual shriek, as I'm afraid Lindy, your character, Maureen, is woken up to find no sign of your daughter, Esther.
Oh, damn.
Esther, I pull the blanket, aka newspapers, back from her little cot. Oh, good heavens. I rush out of the shack in her nightgown, all tattered, and run around looking for my daughter.
So your shack is one of the nearest to the road, and kneeling in the mud, or the ground is actually hard and hoary, and so kneeling in the ice, is a woman called Nancy Carver. Now, she is an ex-lawyer's assistant, and she is, I guess, taking her recovery, or the way that she's coping with her loss of everything, is by drinking anything and everything she can get, and she is normally completely incoherent. And she looks up at you as you kind of burst out of your shack and says, "They came in the night. They came. The men with white faces. They came. They came and they took her."
And Esther? Like,
everyone's awoken by this.
Have you seen Esther? And I kind of grab her and I shake her by the shoulders. And I'm like,
"They took her. The men with white faces.
Men with no faces took Esther.
They came. They tried to take me." And she, you see, like, her fingers are curled into bony claws, and you actually see that one of the hands is caked in blood, like raked her fingernails across someone's face.
Which direction did they run off? Where'd you see him go?
She kind of, like, drops the ground and points towards the road.
Right, we're not gonna run back into the shack real quick, throw on a dress, and then run back out and, if there happens to be any half-empty bottles near Nancy, she's going to take them. Because that's Maureen's flaw, too.
She has dropped a bottle of... You know that she is known for making this horrendous homebrew, which she's incredibly
Perfect.
Stingy with. But she is sort of trembling, and it's just on the floor next to her.
Yeah, I swipe that, and then run up to the road. Just taking a big swig, because good Lord knows I need it this morning, and I see if I can find any sign of Esther.
Okay, do you have tracking as one of your skills?
I do!
What?
I think I would, but I do.
Can you give me a tracking roll, I guess?
Oh! I rolled a 29 out of 50, so that's a success.
Okay, you that's amazing, so you see on the ground there are some footprints. They're sign of a struggle, like they're sort of they crisscross all over. You think at least four people, and they are wearing incredibly expensive shoes. Nothing that anyone in this camp could possibly have worn.
I would know expensive shoes when I seen them.
They're brogues.
Brogues. Oh my goodness, hard of fashion right now. All right.
And they lead up again to the road. The road's about 60 feet away.
Okay, which direction up the road? Like towards town?
So it's they only lead towards the road, so you have to get up to the road to find that direction. So everyone else, so you've all been awoken by this. You've either by Maureen screaming or by Nancy Carver screaming, but you're all up and dragged out of your beds. You're shaking with hunger and with thirst. And it is another delightfully cold November morning.
Oh, a delightfully frigid November morning while you're all half-dressed and half-starved and disease-ridden.
Yes.
What is all this commotion about?
I run out to Nancy, I guess. Like, Nancy, what's going on? Why are you shrieking? What's happened?
Where's my bottle? Where's my bottle? Where's it gone? It was here a minute ago.
Were you screaming over a bottle being missing? Are you serious?
And I just... The men in white coats took it. They took it from me. Oh, no. Maybe it's in my... And she kind of gets up and starts crawling across the floor towards her shack.
I let her go. I think she's mental.
Okay. You do see Maureen heading up towards the road, but you don't know why or...
Yeah.
So I'm walking up. I see Thomas. I'm like, sort of with my walking stick. What was all the noise about?
Nancy lost some of her booze, and Maureen is running off towards the road over there. I don't know. Nancy said something about the men in white masks.
Perhaps we should go. We should go find this Finn character. He was looking for the men in white masks. Perhaps he would be willing to help.
As I wake up in the doctor's shack, is the doctor there?
The doctor is there. He is sleeping soundly, although his breath is laboured.
I will. I'll leave without disturbing him. Sort of dusting off my beloved but much abused clothing.
You do have a worry that, like, is the dust that you're brushing off, is it dirt or is it bits of Harold Priestley? or bits of yourself? You really
want me to have nightmares tonight. Sorry, I just can't get...
Well, that's you all over.
Sorry, I just...
Literally.
I can't get the mental image of just flakes of skin just brushing. So I can't tell whether I'm actually succeeding.
Is this dandruff, or is
yes,
this...
Yes, exactly. It's like, as I'm dusting my clothes off, they're almost getting more scaly from just the flesh, from the psoriasis, like, inflammation on my hands. Like, and I wander out, and I see there's a commotion going on. I was like, what's going on here? What's everybody in a panic about?
One of our shantytown residents lost her alcohol and said that the men with white masks stole it, and we haven't caught up to Maureen yet. She's running up the street towards the road with also a bottle of booze.
So it's a party.
At this point, I'll
just shake my head and I'll start heading towards the road as well. Intending to head back into town and replace my badge and gun.
Okay, so while this is going on, Lisa, what's your character doing? So, Agatha.
Agatha would wake up, in her desk chair. Realize that she'd fallen asleep mid-report, and she'd gather those notes and gather up her scrapbook with articles in it, a notepad, kind of shove them in her bag, and kind of head back out to the doctor's tent to see what is going on, and then follow the rest of them, trying to piece together if the doctor has more notes, if there are any reports he's made at all about this disease that we all seem to have, and then follow them.
Okay, so you're heading towards the doctor's, to the medical shack?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so Maureen, do you drink any of this?
Yeah.
Okay, can you make me a constitution check?
Yeah, sure.
Roll for drunk.
That's a 93 out of 50.
Hey.
So you are a hardened drinker.
Yeah. Drinking a little more than is good for me is one of my personality traits.
But, I mean, you would be lucky if you had the equivalent of a single meal on the previous day, and a hard liquor hits your stomach like a lead ball. But I'll let you choose as a character whether you want to immediately vomit it up or whether it makes you incredibly drunk. That's totally up to you.
Let's
go
with incredibly drunk.
and that's what happens as the three men approach.
Oh, Maureen, what's the matter? Are you all right?
Esther, have you seen Esther? She's gone. The men in the white masks, Nancy said they took her, and they tried to take Nancy, but they didn't take Nancy.
So, I take the bottle of hooch out of her hand.
No, that's mine. Can't take it.
Maureen, give me the hooch, Maureen.
I will not. This is rightfully mine. I found it on the ground.
Where? Next to Nancy?
That's not none of your business, young man.
I just back up. I'm like, okay.
And as you kind of like stumble back, snatching the bottle from his hands, you kind of land on the floor. And there's a moment where you kind of gather yourself, and then you realise that you're actually sat next to the tire track. So your tracking success is still in action, and you can see that these are fresh tracks broken into the frozen soil.
This is where they went. I point to the tire tracks. They broke wearing fellers and their white masks and their grabby hands. It took my Esther. They walked up here and they drove out towards town or something this way.
Is this still an earshot of me?
Yeah, you're there too.
At this point, I will just turn around and sort of like, this sounds actually interesting and relevant, not just drunken hobos.
Yeah.
Can I hear this as well, or am I too far away?
Yeah, you can hear that. That's fine. Yeah, you're pretty close.
that's promising. Promising. Madam, can I see that bottle for a moment?
No!
I just want to look.
I gave you some last night.
I just want to look at that. Just show me.
I hold it up, but I do not.
Snatch it out of her hand, take a sip.
No! No!
And then I give it back.
Okay.
You're going to have to give me a constitution roll, I'm afraid, Lisa. and you are not
moonshine.
A hardened drinker, so you're going to need to make it at disadvantage.
I have probably been up most of the night, and I have been completely traumatized. That's a 27 over my what?
I'm going to have to ask you to make it a disadvantage, so you're going to have to roll another d10 against you.
Joe's like, damn it, she passed. Better make it a disadvantage.
One.
Oh. Wow. Okay, so you drink it, and the kind of fire burns down your throats for a minute, and it kind of does dull your senses for a moment, and you do feel yourself feeling better.
Ooh.
For a moment.
That does a body good. Thank you. Thank you for letting me see that. I guess answers are forward. I guess let's go. I think.
So Agatha is pointing down. Sorry, Marine is pointing down at these tire tracks, which are clear there, and you can all see now they've been pointed out to you. These footsteps leading up. I mean, you're not entirely sure how many, but definitely more than two or three. And they're leading up to the road where there is this car tire tracks going off towards town. Other than that, the only thing you can see nearby is the Blue Star Diner, which is just opening at this time in the morning. Now, the Blue Star Diner, the woman who owns it, it's called Ada, and she is a stern woman who sunk most, if not all, of her savings into the Blue Star Diner in 1929. The timing was just perfect for her. And she's sympathetic, if quite hard, but she will not tolerate any of you being around paying customers. but if you come at the right time, she'll often give you the used coffee grounds and even a bit of leftover food. Unfortunately, you do see at least two cars parked outside the diner right now.
Perhaps we should steal one of these cars.
Leave the tracks lead up to the diner. Like, oh, they just decided to get a spot of breakfast after kidnapping my daughter before going off.
In the diner, is there like a bunch of guys with white masks on sitting around the table?
They're wearing brogues.
Yeah. You're not sure, but possibly. Give me a tracking roll.
Oh, right. Let's try. Let's see if we can get this. That's also a success, a 35 out of 50.
So you kind of follow the tracks along, and they get to the road, and they do not pull over to the diner. So right now you're kind of about, I don't know, 200 feet away where the diner is, and definitely not.
Just sway stumbling down the road with my bottle following these tracks.
But you do see the four people in the diner. So there's two businessmen and then a couple who are in the window of two different tables looking out at you in horror as you stumble around.
I'm not even on the property yet. I'm just through the road.
I'm going to take out my camera, and as we're following her, and snap some shots of the diner and snap some shots of her in the road as a horrible, as the darkest imagery poetry there could be
woman.
For for the situation.
Well, detective, there's a missing child. How do you feel about maybe looking into that?
So Lisa, just before we do, so if you want to have a camera, I'm not going to say no, but it's definitely broken.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Agatha Priestley's not employed, is she? She may have been a reporter previously.
I was a reporter, but it's all I know how to do. And she's like,
right.
If she can focus on one thing to do that's not her garden and her scrapbook...
And I think to everyone else, it's clearly broken. It's this really, really broken form, but she's like using it really intently.
It's like, you know when you're playing video games with the younger kid and like you give them the controller that's not plugged in?
Exactly like that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Agatha, whatever keeps you sane. But really, we should carry on.
I have to document this, you know. You have to document all of it.
Turning to Thomas and say, and how am I supposed to investigate anything when I don't have a badge and a gun?
Oh, do you need a badge to investigate things? Does it make you smarter?
Salt alert!
No, but it does rather help shut up smart Alex. And he just turns his back and just starts heading into town. I'll be back when I've checked in.
So, Thomas, you know that town is not close.
So, we'll see you in a week then, will we? Enjoy your walk. No one's going to pick you up looking like that, even if you hitch.
And meanwhile, so Maureen, you've kind of got these tracks, and Ida has burst out of the door. There's like a jingle of bells, and she marches down the steps and approaches and goes, "What the hell are you doing here? I've told you folks before, you do not come during the day, not when I've got paying customers."
Ida, they took Esther. She's gone. I can't find her anywhere.
Your little girl?
Yes. She's only 12. She can't be out on her own like this. Kidnapped. This man with no faces.
Who took her? Those men? It wasn't Thomas, was it?
What? Hey!
No, I don't think it. No, Thomas wouldn't steal her. I'd find her in town if that was the case. No, it was the men with no faces. They got white masks and they're wearing fancy brogues and they have an automobile. They drove off that way during the night at some point.
During the night? Come with me. Come with me. And she starts to lead you round, like, not actually into the diner.
Yeah, round the back.
The nice, yeah. Round the back. last night, I saw someone.
You did?
Black car, huge thing. About 2 o'clock. Full it was. I couldn't see anyone inside, but it was full. I could tell that much. Heading into town. Black thing.
As they're talking, I'm going to try to... Can I sneak in the back door of the diner?
So you're not actually there. You're about 200 feet away.
Oh, never mind.
So, but she says, so it's a black Cadillac 16 drive something or other. Black Cadillac, anyway. So she says it's a black Cadillac. Anyway, do you want me to phone the police?
I think that would be wise. We actually have an investigator here, but he seems to have misplaced his badge and ID. I think if he could talk to the police station. Could he use your phone?
Right, well...
He took a nasty bump to the head. I think he was mugged.
I'll phone them. You wait here.
Okay.
And she disappears off inside. So, sorry, Lisa, I interrupted you. What are you all doing? You're about 200 feet away?
Yeah.
While
they were distracted, I was going to try to head in and maybe just take someone, if there were any plates in there that had leftover toast or leftover breakfast, I wanted to just try to grab some food.
Okay, so you're kind of stumbling down the road towards the diner with the sort of idea of stealing food. What about the three men? What are you three doing?
And get a look at the diners and get a look at who they are.
I'm going over towards, what's the name of the diner owner again?
Ada.
Ada.
I'm going over to Ada and Maureen. Because I heard Ada accusing me of stealing a child.
Ada Brody.
Ada what? Brody?
Brody, yeah.
Yeah. I'll head towards the canteen as well.
So as you reach the canteen, obviously Lisa, your character can be slightly ahead. The door kind of jingles open, and Ada kind of barges out. And she sees you and goes, "Are you with Maureen?"
Yes.
Right, quick, come with me. And she kind of leads you all around the block where sort of Maureen is sat sobbing and drinking her hooch.
Yeah, basically it's just ugly, full on ugly crying. Just
Finn, are you there as well?
I think I've walked off down the road into town.
You're walking
like,
down the road.
I was hearing the other people say, "Oh, there's a phone there." Fuck. I hope somebody shouts after me. But nope, so I'm out. I'm
the last thing you heard was like
you
just shouting off down the road after you, like saying, "Yeah, enjoy your walk, you fucking loser."
Maureen probably would have yelled after him because she does realize we're calling the police. This guy says he's an investigator. She'd been like, "Mr. Finn, Mr. Anders."
Are you going to run onto the road and get him, or are you just sort of shouting from behind the diner?
Both.
Okay, so Finn, give me a listen or spot hidden. It's up to
you. Stumble yelling.
Oh, now I have the extreme success. I roll a 4 against 50 to listen.
Nice.
It's like a bat signal.
Right? So you kind of turn around and you hear all this and you see sort of Lisa's character drunkenly stumbling up the road with the three guys sort of chasing after her, and you see Maureen screaming your name as Ada sort of is disappearing inside the diner.
He perks up like a meerkat and just in amongst all the drunken, incoherent rambling, picks out the words like phone, police station, diner.
Yeah, we're found at the police station, bastard. You're a policeman or something, investigate like, and it's just, come on over here.
Might be a better idea to call. I wish someone then walk and starts walking towards the diner.
When it gets over, I'm like, some investigator he is, yeah.
I found the tracks! Wait, like this way.
It's like, you're basically gonna say, you're both a hobo and it's the 1930s and I'm a police officer. You're not very attached to your teeth.
Just so you know, my character is in no way convinced that you're actually a police officer.
Right.
He just thinks that you're some, like, stuck up asshole who, like, was dumped out here by someone who beat him up.
And also, Tom, none of them are hobos. Like none of them are transients. Like they're all like down on their luck.
I used to be a very wealthy man.
So a few minutes, you kind of all gather outside the diner as the four eaters glare down at you, looking disgusted. And Ada comes out and sort of says, "Come around here. This is very, very odd." And she ushers you around the back and says, "I phoned the police. They were interested at first, but as soon as I said it was Hooverville, they completely lost interest and refused to come out. In fact, he actually hung up on me."
No.
Did you tell them that we have the famous Finn Anders with us?
And I think that is where we're going to leave today's episode. So thank you very much at home for listening, and thank you everyone for playing. I've been Joe Trier, and if you want to find any more of me, I'm available on Twitter at HWR Podcast. So everyone playing, where can people find you, and is there anything you want to share, starting off with Curran?
Hey, I'm Curran. You can find me on Twitter at HowieRollCurran. You can also find me on the HowieRoll Discord, where I tend to frequent.
Can anyone find you? Are you available at all?
Unless you want to come to the pub I work in, no. I'll be available on the Discord if anyone wants to pop by there. We're usually banging around there somewhere. Yeah. And other than that, I'm not really a social media kind of person, so I'm kind of, yeah.
Okay, Lisa, where can people find more of your work? Is anything going on you want to share?
I'm Lisa Lee, and you can find me at Lisa Bell on Twitter, and you can find me in the How We Roll Discord, or at lisaleevo.com.
And Dave, are you available anywhere?
I do have an email address that I am trying to copy and paste for someone else who's not dyslexic to read.
If you send it to me, I can put it in the show notes.
And there we go, and it's verified to work. BartholomewOrmond@gmail.com.
Amazing, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. And Lindy, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to tell the listeners at home a bit about where they can find more of you work and more of your work and where they can find contact you?
Yeah, thanks you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun so far. They can find me online at Twitch and Twitter at LaughLoveLindy. I do a lot of Dungeons & Dragons and Call of Cthulhu type stuff. Some video games too, but mostly the tabletop RPGs. I'm also on Encounter Roleplay's channel a lot, mostly Wednesdays, and on their Call of Cthulhu podcast for More Cthulhu!
Amazing. And we'll be back with the next exciting episode next week. Thank you so much for listening. Before we go, our partners at Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms have a gold chest giveaway for you. All you need to do is log into the game and enter the code BEGSMAUDTAIGSPAZ. If you want to listen to next week's episode right now, then it has already been uploaded to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/howwerollpodcast. We use all the donations made to keep the podcast running, and even a few dollars really, really helps us. This week, we want to say a huge thank you to all of our patrons, including our newest supporters, Taggart Smith and Eric Phillips. We also want to say an additional huge thank you to the incredibly generous donation made by Ravens in the Attic. With your additional support, we have reached our next milestone. And as a reward, in 1 month time, I will be running a very, very special game of Call of Cthulhu for 4 randomly selected Patreons at the $5 or above mark. So again, thank you so much. All that remains to be said is a huge thank you to BattleBards.com for use of their music and sound effects. You should definitely check them out at BattleBards.com. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week.